So tonight we start stepping beyond physical sensation, mindfulness of body, and we're going to look at the second foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of something called Vedana. Vedana is one of those Pali words that is not a really great translation, is the problem. Often you'll see it translated as feelings or feeling. The problem with that word in English is that it has a lot of different meanings. I mean, often when we talk about our feelings, we're talking about our emotional response to something or how I feel about something. That's not what we're talking about tonight. Okay. A couple of weeks from now, we'll get there. So it's not about that sort of feeling in that physical sensation sense or in that emotional sense. It's also not in the sense of, feeling something like reaching out with your fingers or with your feet or your tongue or whatever, to actually seek out physical sensation in some way. We're not talking about that kind of feeling either. So the translation of Vedana that I feel most comfortable with, and I will use as much as I can to keep reminding you that's what I'm talking about, is the word feeling tone, which is problematic in the sense of what does that mean, right? And so it's almost like we're talking about the flavor of feeling as opposed to anything. It's like it has a certain, and you'll see, because I'm going to read the sutta in a second, it has a certain quality. And the beauty of the quality is there's only three forms. And I'll say no more. I want to read the sutta, and then I'm going to spend a fair amount of time explaining this, because here's the interesting thing about Vedana, other than what I've already said. The Buddha in his teachings separates it out from all other what we'll call mental formations, as it's so important that he separates it out and gives it, it's the whole entire second foundation of mindfulness, his mindfulness of Vedana. So this is a big deal. besides here, there's two other prominent teachings that both of that we'll encounter as we go along, where Vedana keeps appearing. One is the 12 steps in codependent arising, which I'll talk about later on today, unique teaching of the Buddha, and also the five aggregates, where the second aggregate, once again, separated out from everything else, is just Vedana, which we'll talk about in 3-4 weeks from now. But we'll get there. So this is a central theme in three of the Buddha's most important teachings. So it sort of indicates to me, boy, I should spend some time talking about it and really keep honing on it. But let's actually read what it says about it here. Okay, and here he's using, in this translation, doesn't use the word feeling tone, which is, it's a bit clumsy, but so he's just using the word feeling, in feelings here. But every time I say feelings, think feeling tone. Sort of, okay. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu abide contemplating feelings as feelings? Here, when feeling a pleasant feeling, a bhikkhu understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. When feeling a painful feeling, he understands, I feel a painful feeling. When feeling a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a neither pleasant nor painful nor pleasant feeling. And he goes on. When feeling a worldly pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel a worldly pleasant feeling. When feeling an unworldly pleasant feeling, he understands, I feel an unworldly pleasant feeling. And so when he goes on in this way with the other two, with the painful and with the neither pleasant nor painful. So here's the most important thing to start with. This, the beauty of Vedana, of this feeling tone, is it only has these three flavors. Something's pleasant, painful, though I prefer the term unpleasant, opposite of pleasant, right? Pleasant, unpleasant, and then that neither pleasant nor unpleasant is kind of clumsy. So we'll often use the word neutral. So feeling tone, Vedana, only has these three forms. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant, it's neutral. That's it. So it's kind of nice in a way. It's so, because it's so simple. And also Vedana is incredibly prevalent in terms of mental factors that arise. Basically, whenever anything arises at any of the sense doors, any sensation at the mental or the physical level that you tune into has as its first result Vedana. Something arises at a sense door, then Vedana arises. And it's one of those three: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. But it's always there. The problem is, it's very fleeting, and it's kind of subtle, because we often sort of conflate the sensation and the Vedana as one thing. It somehow seems like, you know, that particular taste I just had, pleasant. I mean, that taste is always pleasant, right? But because we've been talking so much about impermanence, we know that's not true. We know that, you know, right now, maybe Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream would be very pleasant. But maybe I just ate a big meal and someone offers me some Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream and I taste it and it's like, it's kind of neutral. And if I'd had a lot of Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream lately and I took a taste, it might be, might be unpleasant. So the first thing we have to understand is that the sensation, what arises at one of the sense doors and the Vedana, are two separate events, two separate things. It's very important that we understand this, because that leads to all kinds of interesting things. So, here's what happens. You know, something arises, then Vedana arises, totally separate, brief. But if we are paying attention, we see the feeling tone arise, and it's pleasant. And typically what happens is, because we're not paying attention, because we don't see that, the subtle separation between the object, the sense object, and the actual Vedana, we get caught in our habitual patterns of mind. Pleasant, want more, want to hold on to it. Unpleasant, don't want that, want to push it away. So Vedana is the precursor of the reactive mind states that we're constantly getting in trouble with. But Vedana is totally separate. It is something that's a mental arising that can be noted. And here's another interesting thing. And that's that to actually have Vedana arise, we actually have to have three other things happen first. So when I say something arising at one of the sense doors, what I'm saying is, here's these three causes and conditions must be present. There has to be some external stimulus, you know, sound waves moving through the air, or something that we smell, or even something that's coming out of our unconscious into our conscious mind, a thought of some sort. There has to be the stimulus. There has to be a functioning organ of perception. So if I was deaf and sound waves came, nothing, I'm never going to have that experience. Vedana will never arise, even though the actual sound waves are going. And I have to have active consciousness at that sense door. And all three of those conditions must be met before Vedana will arise. Now, why am I emphasizing this? Well, think about this for a while. Have you ever, as I have often, you know, my mother used to get really mad at me about this, as a matter of fact. You're reading a book, and my mother would say, "Barry, dinner's ready." And I genuinely wouldn't hear her. It's not that the stimulus wasn't there. It's not that my ears weren't functioning. It's simply that my consciousness was so absorbed in what I was reading, in the mental consciousness, mental state, and in the actual physical scene, the three, that I just had sort of turned off my hearing. And this happens all the time to all of us. You know, we're in a situation where, I'll tell you one other little story. I have a friend who's an artist who paints incredibly beautiful, but really, really bright, some would say gaudy things, and huge, massive canvases. But she actually doesn't paint just on canvas. She paints any surface in her house that's bare. So when you go to her house, literally everything is painted in bright colors. I mean, toilet seats. I mean, everything is painted. It's okay. And I remember this really distinctly, going to visit my wife and I, going to visit my friend. And we were there for about an hour. I could only take about an hour, and I was so overstimulated. I couldn't stay there any longer. And then, you know, we had tea, and then we had a nice chat. And as we were going out, and we got into the car, and my wife said, "Did you notice how strong the incense was?" And I hadn't even smelt the incense. Totally, like, incense? What incense? You know. So we. These three separate things, the stimulus, the functioning organ, and the consciousness active at that sense door, all have to be present. Then Vedana arises. And here's the thing. It's like, if we can see Vedana arising, then these habitual patterns of reaction to things that are arising at our sense doors can be lessened, and we're not getting caught. You know, the bait's there. We say, "Oh, pleasant bait." End of the, and then we just know what's next. We're not getting caught, but we have to actually see the Vedana. By the time we reacted to the Vedana, by reaching out and grasping or trying to push away or spacing out because it's neutral, and then clinging and grasping and all that stuff, it's too late now. Now the train is on the tracks and going down the tracks. We've been caught yet again. And being aware that we've been caught down, there's a Vedana in that event, and, you know, so forth. But it's like, we want to, if we can somehow, learn how to see Vedana arising. And to do this, the mind has to be quite still and focused, which is why we put so much emphasis in the beginning on mindfulness of body, because once we can really tune into the body and learn to sort of be concentrated at that level, then there's the possibility of us seeing Vedana. Actually, there it is. Oh, look, there's some feeling though, and noting it. There is another aspect to what was said in the sutta I want to point out as well. He talks about external versus internal Vedana. So external pleasant feeling tone, which arises from outer sense objects, can lead, if we're not careful, to clinging, to grasping, wanting more. Whereas, and this is what he says, internal pleasant feeling arising from, say, concentration, from a wholesome mind state has arisen, and we notice that this wholesome mind state has arisen, and then this pleasantness, the pleasant feeling tone arises. That can lead to joy. And this is a wholesome thing. Okay, this is a good thing. Oh, look. Yeah. So it's important that we learn to sort of differentiate. We if we're not careful, we think, oh, Vedana is always going to cause me trouble. But the Buddha is quite specific. He says, external Vedana is what's going to cause you a lot of trouble. Anything that's brought on from an external object. But if it's brought on from an internal wholesome mind state, or a deeply concentrated mind state, which, by the way, may not be pleasant. You know, we think, oh, all these wholesome mind states are going to be pleasant. If you're quite deeply concentrated, sometimes what arises in the mind is anything but pleasant. You know, strong visions, all kinds of things happen from time to time. Like, so it might be that you're really concentrated, and what arises is a really strong, unpleasant thing. But even that, we can note and not push it away. Because at the same time, it's like, I'm concentrated enough to be aware that's what's going on. That's where intuitive moments arise in this way. You know, sometimes when our that intuitive insight is like about death or old age or sickness or all the things that we have to deal with in this life. So it may not be pleasant, but it's a deeply intuitive, important thing to see and know, because it helps us understand impermanence, for instance, the ones I just gave as an example. So there's this internal versus external. But I actually want to come back to where else the Vedana occurs in the Buddhist teachings. And in particular, there's this teaching that is unique to the Buddha, which is often called the 12 steps. Steps is implies sequence, which is true. But I still don't like the word steps, so there's no other good word for it. The 12 phases, the 12 steps of what's called codependent arising. So first of all, what does codependent arising mean, right? Basically, what codependent arising means is if A happened, B must happen. And also, if B happens, A must have preceded it, must have happened just before. So it's a two-way codependent connection. And in this teaching, what the Buddha is talking about is this continuous pattern of how suffering arises. How we get caught over and over and over and over again. And the first few steps are very subtle and have to do with very subtle mind states that I read about. I'm not even qualified to talk about them, I think, sometimes. But they are, if you're curious, you know, Google codependent arising and you'll find 8,000 articles about it. But here's the key parts, however. Causes and conditions arise such that something arises at one of the sense doors. There's the stimulus that affects one of your sense doors. Consciousness at that sense door arises because all three factors are present. Those three factors I talked about earlier. Then, immediately following consciousness at that sense door, Vedana arises. Depending on the Vedana, we react in one of three habitual ways. Grasping at things that are pleasant, aversion, pushing away things that are unpleasant, and delusion with things that are neutral. We space out, essentially. Go looking for something more stimulating, be it pleasant or unpleasant. Please just give me something that's exciting. You know, that's where our mind often goes. You know, this is boring. Don't want boring. In all cases, if we haven't caught what's going on, clinging arises. Clinging is this tight, not just grasping, but tightly grasping and holding onto. And it sort of makes sense when you think about clinging and you're talking about something pleasant that would, you know, it's there. I really like this. I want more. I'm going to hold on to this. I want to make this permanent. But how does clinging arise to something we don't like? To the, you know, the reaction to the unpleasant, the aversive mind state, fear, anger, disgust, all kinds of different forms. Well, the thing is, what we want to do is push those things away. That, you know, our reactive patterns are to get rid of them. But to get rid of something, to push something away, you first have to make very strong contact. I have to, you know, imagine that aversive thing is some object. Well, to throw the object away, I'd have to first get a really good grip on it before I could fling it. That's exactly what we do on the mental level. So even though it's an unpleasant thing, because the aversion has arisen so strongly, we then cling to that aversive thing. We pull it tighter. In either case, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, this leads to suffering. This is how we create our own suffering over and over and over and over and over and over, and over. Continually, all day long, every day. That's what's going on. It sounds kind of grim, huh? But that's actually the pattern of our minds. That's what, and here's the thing. If we can detect the Vedana, if we can catch this whole process way back there at the step of Vedana arising, and we can note that that it's pleasant, it's unpleasant, it's neutral, and not fall into the reactive patterns, then we have a chance of having the mind really go still, being able to really just, so we note the sensation, we note the Vedana. Next, without falling into the reactive pattern. That's, so like Vedana is like a, you know, if you think of these 12 steps of codependent arising, is often they're often pictured as a circle, as a loop. Like you go through, you suffer, da 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 da, and now here, now that's created more causes and conditions, and something else is going to arise, and you're whirling around in this vicious circle. And Vedana is like the exit door that you're going to veil yourself up. I can go, oh, wait a second, I can just step outside. I don't have to fall into this reactive pattern. If I can actually note the Vedana, but the mind, because Vedana is subtle, the mind has to be fairly still and focused to actually see it. And then the noting itself is really just pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, only three words. That's all, so that those are actual mental notes, just like you can note, you know, sweet and sour and smelly and hard and soft and cool and all those other physical things. We can also then, just like that, we can note the actual Vedana as it arises. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. That's it. The beauty of it is it's so simple. It's only three. Now, how does this actually fit with our practice? Well, the temptation's going to be, now that I'm explaining this all, is to go and just, all right, I have to notice Vedana with every sensation I have. Don't go there. You'll make yourself crazy very quickly. But there, as you're noting, as you're sort of becoming more skillful with noting and sort of getting into the rhythm of it, at times the Vedana of the sensation will jump out. Then note it. Note the actual Vedana itself and see what happens. And then, of course, 3 or 4 seconds later, you're noting something else. So it's not like you've got these little brief windows. But if so, it's not like we want to go out and decide, all right, every sensation I have, I have to note the Vedana of that sensation. Unless you want to try that. I mean, if you've been practicing for a while and you think, oh, let's explore this idea and just sort of decide for a particular sitting or for maybe for the first 5 minutes of a sit or in the middle of a sit, all right, all I'm going to note is Vedana. That's it. All I'm going to do is note the Vedana of what's actually arising. So you, in a sense, you have consciously chosen to step back from the content completely. You know, it's just what is the Vedana that of the event that caught my attention to note it. That's all I want to know. It's an interesting experiment, but take it in small doses, especially at the beginning. But it is, because it gets a way to learn to note it, because often tuning into Vedana and learning to do this will really help in getting your mind to go stiller and more concentrated, which leads other places we'll talk about later. But it's, so this is one of the tools we have to increase the level of concentration we experience. And concentration, since it is one of the steps on the Eightfold Path, probably it's fairly important to cultivate. And this is one place we can do it, is with Vedana. So that's the all I want to say about Vedana now. 3-4 weeks from now, as I said, when we're talking about the five aggregates, I'll say a little bit more about Vedana at that point. The other, except I want to say this, the other interesting thing is this is, the Vedana is like the bridge, in a sense, the mental bridge between sensation and mental formations in the broad sense. Thoughts, emotions, philosophical meanderings, all kinds. Vedana is what bridges those two, ties those two together. Because it's the thing that's always there. Sort of like the breath in that sense, only now we've gone much further along in the process than breath. So it seems that it should be, we should give this some attention. As I said, this is like a central part of the Buddha's teachings, and it occurs in all these different places. And he singled it out for a reason. Partly because it's easy. It is. I mean, it is, relatively speaking, easy to deal with because it's only got three, you only got three choices there. And partly in the sense that it helps us not get caught in those habitual patterns. Okay. Enough said for now. So at this point, excuse me. At this point now, we'll actually sit for about half an hour. And even if you like this seems like, oh my God, he wants me to, I have enough trouble just noticing what's happening in my feet. What does he want me to do with this Vedana stuff? That's okay. Don't feel that you're, if it seems like too much, remember you can always go back to something simpler. Even if it's like, and if you're feeling totally overwhelmed, just go back to the breath. I'm just going to note the breath and nothing else. But we want to try and keep the noting going every 3 or 4 seconds. And if the Vedana of that sense experience jumps out at you, then note it. See what happens. Continue the experiment in that sense. Okay. So for those of you who are listening to this as a recording, at this point, you should pause your recording, and we're all going to sit for about half an hour. So I'm now going to just encourage you to close your eyes, sit very upright and solid. Feet, if you're in a chair, feet flat on the floor. Heart lifted and open. And then I'm going to turn my mic off and we'll just sit for about half an hour. So as always, I want to finish with a poem. And this is from Mary Oliver's book, Evidence. And it's called I Am Standing. I am standing on the dunes in the heat of summer, and I am listening to mockingbird again, who is tonguing his embellishments, and in the distance, the shy, weed-loving sparrow, who has but one soft song, which he sings again and again, and something somewhere inside my own unmusical self begins humming. Thanks for the beauty of the world. Thanks for my life. Seems like a very wholesome mind state to me, which is why I wanted to read it. That's good. So let's dedicate the merit. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere. I also want to remind you all that, I keep asking for questions and something, and that's okay. But often sometimes something in the middle of the week, something will occur. Don't hesitate to send me an email. And I'll be happy to respond as best I can in that written form. I'm totally open to that, and it's part of what I offer is that as well. So don't be shy about contacting me if you have questions. Is, you know, you have an interesting thing arise in a practice one morning, or just an interesting thing in your life arises for that matter, and you want to have some connection, comment, just email me, and we can even find a FaceTime time to just to have the two of us have a conversation if that's what's needed. I'm happy to do that. Other than that, good night all.